Welcome to News and a Bit of Politics, Episode 1. Hi, I'm Edward. I'm a designer from Massachusetts, and I live in Brooklyn.
I'm Nalia. I am a shop and restaurant owner, so small business owner, and I live in Brooklyn. I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, originally.
Hi, I'm Dana, and I'm from Kuwait. I'm an interior designer and performance artist.
And I will start off with the first topic, which will just be about Turkey in general. So I'll just read like a little bit from this article that was on the 22nd of November. 15,000 more public workers are fired in Turkey crackdown. The government dismisses an additional 15,000 civil servants from their jobs and shutting down 375 organizations, including 9 more news outlets. It says more than 100,000 public workers, including police officers, teachers, soldiers, and others, had already been fired for what the authorities said were connections to a failed coup on July 15th against the president. So this is just crazy. So basically Turkey, they tried to overthrow the government in July unsuccessfully. And then as a response, the president of Turkey has been firing anyone that he said is even remotely related to that, which is he's basically just given himself a way of firing whoever he wants and anyone that's against him. Turkey is obviously very important and everything that's happening over there, because it's basically the gateway between Europe and the Middle East. At the same time, Turkey's trying to become a member of the EU. The EU has since said that they are suspending negotiations, I think is the latest from a week or two ago. Turkey is in response. There's other articles where they say the president has said that he's threatening to let the migrant flood into Europe resume, meaning that he'll just let people from Syria and wherever
That's
straight on up into Europe.
That's because they suspended the EU conversation.
And then at the same time, Turkey's been sort of softening in talks with Russia and China about joining their own separate organization, which is not in the same as the EU, but it's more of a military cooperation.
Is it an either-or situation if they join those other organizations they cannot?
I would say yes, probably. Okay. But at the same time, Turkey is also part of NATO, which is a U.S. alliance. So joining the Russia-China kind of would obviously create a conflict.
It would.
So they're kind of appealing to everyone right now. But that's also where their world position is, so it's very interesting.
I think it's because they messed up in Syria. You know, where they were supporting a lot of the rebels against Assad, and they were providing a passageway for people to enter Syria through the border. So I think, you know, they thought they could play a prominent role in controlling the future of Syria, and when things got out of control because of Russia, because of Iran, you know, and now the rebels only have a third of Aleppo, control of East Aleppo.
Right, it seems clear that they're going to lose that.
Yeah, and I think he's just like trying to throw up any toys he has in the air and try to figure out how he can still be prominent in the world stage.
But just to travel back, when you talk about he is individually going after people that were trying to participate in overthrowing the government, is it like down to like, okay, Mary Sue, you participated in this way, so therefore you are going to be fired? Is it like literally like individuals,
I think that
is
individuals for sure. I think that what they say specifically about the reasons are vague from what I understand. It's kind of like, we're investigating your relations with this.
And you have, and we will not be employed.
Right. And the EU's response for saying we're suspending talks with you about joining is because of this.
That.
Because of what they say is an overreaction.
Because they will just imprison them.
Are they being unemployed or imprisoned?
I think, unemployed, but also sometimes imprisoned.
Yeah, most likely.
But what is that going to do to their economy?
Well, it slumped tremendously because their tourism industry is
biting off your nose to spite your...
But at the same time, you have countries like Russia and China who are probably willing to give you money to support you disengaging from the EU. Because
maybe that's why.
Russia and China obviously want... Syria is a very... Turkey is a very strategic location for anyone.
But, okay, if I'm giving you money to say, okay, I need you to disengage from the EU...
Well, not that we're saying that they're doing it, but maybe, yeah.
But, but if just to go down the road with that theory... Then at the same time, we just established that they're kind of keeping their options open. So for me, if I was given money, I would say, I'm only giving you money if you tell me 110% you're coming with me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's kind of weird that they would be getting money from these people hypothetically, but still be interested in like, oh, well, I still keep my options open. It's kind of like, mm. You know?
Yeah, when I was looking at this earlier, there was an article from 2013 that said Turkey hints at breakup with Europe. And this was basically the same situation. They were trying to become members. They're angry that it's taking so long. This article actually says that Turkey had like started talking with Russia and China, but they sort of presented as kind of like they would never go down that route. Mm-hmm. But now it seems way more likely that that's probably what they're going to do. Because there are other things... Turkey has the death penalty, which you can't have as a EU member.
All the human rights kind of regulations.
All those types of things. But, yeah.
Freedom of speech. It's he's been known to take down reporters and imprison them for reporting on the Armenian genocide
And I mean, the other thing about all of this is I always just in my mind think, I guess, about Turkey as being a much more free speech, democratic type of place. Like, it's a, you know... Not that I think about it in that way, I guess, but...
Maybe it's all the marketing.
I don't think I know...
You know, this country
extent.
Marketing, so they promote
they want
themselves.
To they still want tourists to come.
Yeah.
You know, they've gotten some bad press, and, you know, they don't want people to be afraid to come or whatever, because they still want that tourism, so...
They need the business.
They need the business, so of course they're gonna, like...
Fix up their image, fixing up their airlines, you know, having, you know, these beautiful stewardesses and da-da-da. But, I mean, Erdogan is also known to control he was complaining that the stewardess's lipstick is too red, that they should go for more like a nude. So this was like a few years ago, you know, he was just starting things were starting to come out of control with the Gezi Park demonstrations. So that was one of the funny ones where he was trying to get involved into the stewardess's lipstick.
Yeah.
You know?
And what was the final outcome of that?
No, I mean, he couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, let's go on to next topic.
Well, I think this could be a good segue since we're talking about, like, dictatorship and control and that kind of thing to talk about what's happening in Cuba right now with the recent passing of Fidel Castro and just what impact it's going to have on Cuba and... really just how different people are responding. And I think that whether it's, you know, the student's lipstick or whatever, I think, you know, anytime you have a group of people that are like controlled, like through communism or whatever, there's certain people that kind of grow up in that system and that's kind of all they know, the same way that I grew up in the U.S. and freedom is kind of all that I know. And so anytime that kind of gets disrupted, whether it's, you know, one way or to the other extreme, I think people start to kind of get nervous, you know what I mean? So I think that you have two groups of people and you have, you know, now the fact that this guy is dead, you know, you have some people that are just like, I think they did like 9 or 10 days of mourning, you know, and they felt like, you know, what this person was able to bring for like, you know, education, like healthcare, like all this kind of stuff. And then you have a separate group of people that fleed and went to Miami or, you know, wherever, that are kind of just like, you know, this person, you know, was the cause of so much like distress and problems and we had to flee and this and that. So I think it's like just interesting when you look at any country, whether it's, you know, Cuba or Turkey or whatever, that's used to having a certain level of control and just how some people really become used to that and really kind of are happy with their rationings. You know what I mean? Like, this is, at least you know that this is what your portion is. At least you know that you're going to have this and you either accept it or you don't. And a lot of people do accept that as much as, you know, sometimes we, the free, like to look in and say like, oh, you know, that's not fair or blah, 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 whatever. I think that you have people that actually live through that, that maybe they don't know any better, or maybe they do know better and that is actually, it works, or mm-hmm. maybe we don't know any better, who knows? But I just, you know, I don't necessarily have an opinion one way or the other, but I think Obama, when he gave his kind of like condolences to the family, I think it was very neutral in the sense that, you know, like, hey, this guy, it talked about his contributions and you can't look away from his contributions that he did contribute, whether it was, you know, bloodshed or whatever, his contribution that he made to that country, you know? So I think it just kind of goes with the whole, like, just dictatorship and just, you know, now you have Facebook and Instagram and social media and people are overthrowing their government on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I think that's what happened in Tunisia. It's mm-hmm. just, but I think that it's one thing to overthrow your government, but once they're gone, I think a lot of people don't know what to do mm-hmm. when you don't have the lines kind of drawn in for you. You don't yeah. really know how to, people are used to coloring in the lines. And mm-hmm. I think that it gets worse a lot of times before it gets better.
Yeah.
Because I think it's about people just kind of adjusting and kind of coming back. So I think we have to be really careful when we judge other nations or other people or the way they mm-hmm. do things. You and I were talking earlier about just like you're from Kuwait mm-hmm. and what are some norms in the street that are, mm-hmm. you know, you can and cannot do and what you can and cannot talk about or present or publicly, you know, show. And I think for me that might be weird. But mm-hmm. I think at the same time I have to kind of stand back and be like, okay, this is what is represents law and order for them.
Mm-hmm.
And to disrupt that sometimes is a lot more harm than it is help.
Mm-hmm. Because you have to kind of let it grow kind of organically. I mean, the U.S. isn't what it is today without all the struggles and mm-hmm. civil war and everything it faced 200 years ago. And mm-hmm. same with Europe. In the Middle East, I mean, a lot of people liked or idolized mm-hmm. Fidel Castro.
Mm-hmm.
Because they saw him as a leader who stood up to the West,
mm-hmm.
you know, and did what he believed in. So there was a lot of mourning in that side of the world.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I wasn't alive in the 60s. I don't know what his earlier legacy was. So I can't imagine there is a lot of, you know, like it's the people in Miami celebrating. There must be a reason why they are mm-hmm. celebrating, and he had hurt so yeah. many people.
Yeah,
And the people who are disconnected from that, you know, are the ones who are mourning. Possibly,
I think it's the same thing with the U.S., where it's like we are sometimes really blind to what our impact is when we get involved in other countries. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have certain countries that look at us and are like, "Oh my God, I hate these people." Where sometimes we just have no idea, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think when someone dies, it's like, you know, it means one thing to one group of people and another thing to another group mm-hmm. of people. It's as, yeah. you know, it's with anything. It's even with, like, you know, and not to, you know, segue too much into, like, Trump, but it's like him winning means one thing to one set of people and another mm-hmm. thing to another set of people. It's with any sort of leadership, mm-hmm. you know what mm-hmm. I mean? That I just think that it's all about perspective. It's what side of the fence you were on when the fence went up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But probably the moral is that we can all benefit from learning why both sides think the way they do.
Agreed. Agreed.
Because in most cases, it's probably not out of like a yeah. negative or a bad.
Yeah.
And I think freedom as we know it, whether it be social media or some of these other things or I think is a evolving process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that everyone doesn't have to get there and everyone, some countries are deeply rooted in their religion. And I think that, you know, they may not ever get there, but it doesn't mean that it's a bad place. Mm-hmm. It just means that these are what they're built on. We are the land of the free, you know? And I think we've evolved and kind of gotten to this place, but even that goes without saying that we have our own evolution, and when it comes to even the United States, when we start talking about just like race and some of these other things that I think that are still like, we think we've evolved past it, but not quite yet. So I just think that every nation has its problems and mm-hmm. every person means something different to them based on, like we said, what side of the fence. So to Eddie's point, I think it's about really understanding what each side feels, you know? So.
Next topic.
So now that you've brought up Trump or the, you know, today Italy's prime minister resigned because the public voted a referendum and a third of the Italian constitution has changed. And that means that the far, you know, some people are calling that a celebration for the far right movement in Europe. So people who want, that's anti-immigration, you know, a lot of the troubles that Europe is going through now, even with France, is calling that a sign that maybe France should also go through the same process. And people have predicted that this could be a Brexit for Italy. So it's not really clear. And it the market shares have dropped about, I think, 70% in Italy.
Wow.
Was it 70%? So it's just the reason why people have voted against the referendum was because, I mean, I'm trying to understand their point of view, is because a lot of, you know, the referendum was kind of like, right, do we go away with the Senate having to approve everything? Or do we just have a decision maker and then going with it? It's kind of to speed up process. On the other side, people were scared that this would bring up like fascism again, because it was implemented, I think, in 48 to kind of put down the powers of, the, you know, a single person.
Yeah.
So this is just an interesting moment for Italy and Europe right now, you know.
But yeah, I feel like that's one of the big problems with the EU, is that it just doesn't seem like as a governing body, they, or not a governing body, but that as a body, they can't do things fast enough. They can't react to these big things that are happening to them and in Europe with the migrants and, you know, everything. It, like, it's such a bureaucratic channel of...
Yeah.
That it takes so long.
Yeah, yeah. That it's kind of, it's already happening. People are already coming over. They are still, it doesn't seem like they are equipped to deal with the migrants that they have. And
But the other side to that is if it becomes where it's just kind of like one channel of decision making, you better make sure that channel has the right...
Well, exactly.
Whatever the right intentions are. And what are the right intentions? Because we just talked about how one thing for one person means something else for another. So, I mean, what is the answer? You know?
I think it's just interesting to see what happens next for Europe. You know, this is kind of history happening right now.
Right.
You know, Brexit was the beginning of the breakdown of the EU. And
it kind of feels like the whole world is in shambles right now. I mean, I guess... At any period or any point, it always is. But now that we're just kind of talking about all these news topics at once, it's just kind of like...
Well, I do think there is like a big breakup or happening in Europe, obviously. But there's... I do think... Yeah, it seems like this, the far-right movement in a lot of countries is gaining momentum. But I don't know. It's, in some ways, it's like you can't directly necessarily blame them because... You know, a lot of these countries are taking in migrants from areas that who knows where they're coming from, and it's obvious the governments aren't able to deal with them in a way that would make me feel safe if I was in Italy or these countries that are directly where people can just literally just walk across the border.
Yeah, the sad thing is that there has not been any, I mean, or maybe the control was put in too late, but you have people recklessly crossing the sea, and it's heartbreaking, you know, and they must be so miserable in their current condition in order to risk their lives to go across.
And you have to examine or talk about that, the, you know, yes, there is, you know, people that come over that can present harm to the country, then there's people that's coming over that are like...
Right, and it's like we're so far removed that I don't think that most of us could even imagine getting to that point where we would risk so much, like knowing that so many people have not made that journey to get into a some boat, not see the land on the other side, and just say, this is the only option I have.
You know what I mean? And so if you are that person and you are making that journey, you want someone on the other end to be like, yes, come. But at the same time, you want there to be if you're living in that country. You know, maybe we would feel differently. Well, I know you're not living in the U.S., but Eddie, maybe you and I would feel differently if they were kind of just getting in this boat and, like, getting off in California or somewhere where...
Oh, well, yeah, we're so removed, I think,
yeah,
here from
it's,
all
so
of
it's it. Like our opinion is a little bit different, you know, where it's more like, well, what about that mother and that kid? Where
yeah.
maybe someone that lives there that's actually like, well, wait a minute, what about that other person?
Yeah.
So I think, like... I don't know. I feel like in the end, it's going to all come down. That's what it's all about. It's going to all come down to a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's about having compassion through perspective and just really educating yourself with what it feels like to be
mm-hmm.
on both sides and trying to find
mm-hmm.
a happy medium, which is, I guess,
mm-hmm.
the political game.
Yeah. I mean, there are legitimate ways of screening people and getting them... into refugee status. It just takes a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that's why people are becoming very, or have become very
desperate.
I was surprised in Germany. I was there a month ago, and I think I kept meeting people. So you know how here I get on an elevator and someone brings up Trump to
mm-hmm.
me. You know, it's like instead of, oh, how's the weather in New York City? No, it's, so that guy Trump, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In Germany, you know, it was the refugee crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be like, so what do you think about the refugee crisis? And the more I was talking to people, the more I realized they were all open to accepting people. And they had also volunteered, bringing them clothes, teaching them German
mm-hmm.
for free,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the young kids. So I was actually surprised because, you know, in our media in the Middle East, it's like, oh, you know, they're anti, everyone's anti-immigration, everyone's, you know, anti-Arab, and everyone that looks Arab is in danger if you travel to Europe. But, you know, on the contrary, when I was there, it was very, you know, people were very helpful and excited to help the Syrians who
yeah.
were coming over. So I thought that was, you know, I was like, wow, I mean, there is goodness in this world. And, you know, maybe Angela
yeah.
Merkel is actually doing something right about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I'll move on to the next topic, which will just be an article that I had read in the Times a few weeks ago on the 17th. This is also a Trump topic. The title was Trump's Size Idea for a New President, Build Something Inspiring. And I'll just read the opening of it. It says, here's how President-elect Trump could unify a bitterly divided America, provide well-paying jobs to many of the millions of disaffected workers who voted for him, and lift the economy, stock market, and tax rolls. All he needs to do is what he presumably does best, build something. And so then the article sort of goes into and talks about how really not since FDR and the Depression have the president and the government undertook huge infrastructure projects. It kind of goes through the Golden Gate Bridge, Hoover Dam, Lincoln Tunnel, Timberline Lodge. All of these are Depression-era public works projects that are still in use. It says, can anyone name even one infrastructure project from President Obama's $800 billion America Recovery and Reinvestment Act? No, no one
mm-hmm.
can. And I just personally feel struck by infrastructure being in New York City, which I'm sure you probably do as well. this is definitely probably a pinnacle of where we're suffering in infrastructure, with I think there's way more people here than they estimated, and we're certainly not doing our job here about keeping up the subway and roads and things. It says in the article, during FDR's administration, he built 78,000 bridges, 650,000 miles of roads, 700 miles of airport runway, 13,000 playgrounds, 125,000 military and civilian buildings, and more than 40,000 schools,
well,
in most cases of high standards of quality and design.
In Trump's speech, didn't he say our highways will be second to none?
Well, he's,
he did say that.
He has made infrastructure a big part of everything he says. And, you know, I think we all just hope that he follows through on some of those things.
But at what cost? Who's paying for this infrastructure?
Well, I think with things like that, it becomes projects where the government's investing money in these projects that will ultimately help the country. But at the same time, they're giving people jobs by doing the projects.
Right.
It goes on and says, Mr. Trump has pledged $1 trillion over 10 years, but no one I spoke to thought that was enough. Doubling that would be more realistic. That's the person that they're talking to in the project. But it also kind of hints at that Trump's policies, they fear, don't go beyond his electioneering slogans. But yeah, I don't know. Infrastructure, I feel like, is such a big deal in this country. Every time I go home to Massachusetts, the highways are generally 3 to 4 lanes, and just any time of day now, it's constant traffic. And I remember growing up, and the highways were 2 lanes, and they were adding those extra 3 and 4 lanes, and it was like, oh, we're going to have lots of... But no, there's just more people, there's more cars. It doesn't seem like anywhere is really doing enough to keep up with it. And I feel like, especially when I go to other countries, a lot of them have much nicer... I don't know. The tube in London, I think, is astronomically nicer than the subway here. Obviously, it shuts during the night and they have time. But I don't think that's, you know, that's not really a reason for that big of a difference. Or airports, LaGuardia. I mean, everyone's talks about LaGuardia being one of the worst airports ever. But infrastructure hazards, no one?
I mean... Yeah, I think when you talk about the New York City subway, I think, yes, there's definitely some improvements, and they're all needed, and they're always claiming to be making these improvements, and subway fares are going up and going up. And yes, when you're in London, when you're in Montreal, when you're in some of these other places, and you're on the subway, not Paris,
Paris. I go into like
a time warp when I'm there. I'm like, really have to still flip the switch to open the door. Like, I need you to work on that.
We're not that far ahead over here.
Yeah, but at the same time, we're run 24 hours. So you know what? I'll take it. And but when you start talking about bridges and highways and this and that, you know, I think I had more of an opinion when I was in Atlanta and behind my car and driving and around a lot. So I can't really say that, you know, I drive the occasional drive down to Virginia to visit my brother for Thanksgiving or whatever. But I can't really say that I am like affected by, you know, but you drive back and forth to Massachusetts a lot more. And
well, I take the train usually. I mean, sometimes I used to take the bus more because it's so much cheaper. And the reason I don't is because the bus says 4 hours, but oftentimes it's 6, 7 hours. Yeah. And that's because of traffic. And it definitely used to more often be 4 hours. And now it's...
But should there be a more robust, instead of like roads and bridges, which that's fine too, but should there be a more robust way for people to get around?
And I think other countries are investing more money. This is a really absurd one. And every time I looked at it, I just couldn't imagine it being a real thing. And I think that it was in China, I want to say. But they were developing a sort of bus that would go over the highway or over roads. So it was kind of had 2 sidewalls and then it hovered on top. But the whole idea was just completely absurd, I think. But, you know, at least they're trying to think of some way of... Because that's what I was saying to my parents last time I was home, like... You know, are they going to have a 10-lane highway running through this? Like, it's crazy. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, a lot of urban planners say that if you increase, like, highway size, then the cars will increase.
Right.
And then it will keep increasing.
Exactly.
So, actually, a lot of the urban planners suggest not to increase, you know, to actually put a tighter limit. So more people can use public transportation.
Exactly.
Use bikes. Use
the infrastructure has to go into better.
Well, infrastructure is, it's not just roads.
It has to be, for me, the answer is better public transportation. Because someone coming from a city like Paris or, you know, a European city where, or New York, where it's like, I'm from Atlanta. I never met adult people over like 16 years old that did not know how to drive until I got to New York. I'm like, wait, what? I don't know how to drive, but obviously it makes sense, blah, blah, blah. But I know if I was a New Yorker that did not know how to drive, I, you know, get my passport and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to all these European cities. I'm going to travel, whatever. I may not go to Detroit or I may not go to Denver or I may not go to places in my own country because I kind of feel like, how am I going to get around there? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like we have opportunity within our country to really, I mean...
To interconnect the cities.
I'm from Atlanta, and our system is called the MARTA rail. And it's like, okay, I mean, it's literally the map looks like a T-bar. You know, it's like you're either going up, down, east, or west. Anything in between, God help you.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're going to walk down those four-lane highways. You know, they need to make a passenger lane because it's like so crazy. So if you don't have a car when you're there, so the goal then becomes, that's why you need 8-lane, 10, 12-lane highways. The goal then is because it's, as soon as I turn 15, I got to get my learner permit so that when I'm 16, I get my car so that I am not on that MARTA rail.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, and then it becomes a status thing where it's just kind of like in New York, a rich, a poor, whoever is on the train. Where in some of these other cities, it's just like the lower income population is on there because it's like, okay, you can't afford a car kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes almost like a status thing versus like a convenience thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's strange because Europe's all connected by railway, you know, and it's huge.
Yeah.
You know, but you can get from Hungary to London by train if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know, granted, you'd have to stop in different cities, but, you know, like I was trying to visit my friend in Columbus, Ohio. Last week I was looking at airplanes, but I'm like, why isn't there just a train? Like, okay, even though it's 9 hours.
Go there?
I have to go to Pittsburgh, and then there's a bus or something. Like, no. It's just, it's weird.
No.
You know?
You.
So,
yeah.
But even Amtrak, like, I can't complain about Amtrak enough, because it's still 4 hours to Boston. It's only 200 miles, and those train tickets are so expensive that it's crazy.
I decided, for whatever reason, that I was going to take the train and go to Montreal. And it's like, are you kidding me? The amount of times you stop to do this and do that, it's like, I might as well have rented a car and just drove to Montreal.
It's
just like, it's probably cheaper.
Yeah, Amtrak is just like, oh my God, like, are you kidding me?
I don't know where the money's going, not towards the cafe car.
Or if I want to go see, it's definitely not the cafe car where they're like microwaving everything. But it's like, and that's another thing. It's like, just because you're on the out there on the open rail does not mean that everything needs to be microwave. It doesn't mean that you cannot have some
sort of
kitchen.
It looks like something out of like the 80s
or
something.
Yeah, some sort of situation where it's like, okay, you know, and then I don't want you to microwave something in the plastic you poke a hole.
Yeah.
And then you want to charge me these crazy prices.
Yeah, you paid $130 for this train ticket. Now you're paying $8 for this sandwich.
Yeah, they've got to figure it out. I was taking the train to Virginia. And it's like a whole hour more because they want to stop in D.C., which is the major train stop, and refuel and this and that. And I'm just kind of like, get it together.
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, it's actually better for me just to go to D.C., get off the train, and have my brother drive from Virginia to come pick me up. It's faster than to sit and wait for them to, like, change the engine, change the whatever it is that they're doing. I'm just like, this is so archaic, you know? Like, when you're traveling from country to country, they can get you there in 2 hours on the Eurorail. We're not stopping to refuel for an hour between New York and Virginia.
Yeah, because the trains we do have are so outdated, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah, I agree. That's my infrastructure bit.
All right, next topic now. That's you.
Okay, I'm trying to think. My other topic was in San Francisco. They just had this
fire.
This fire is pretty sad. I mean, I know they're still investigating, and it was like an artist kind of like living situation or whatever, and they don't know exactly what happened, but I just thought that was pretty sad.
I was trying to look up the news to understand what was happening, but I couldn't get more than it was a warehouse that burned down and 30 people
and
got
that's
killed.
It. They're not saying
from what
more.
I understood from, I had read different bits and pieces of it, and it was, I think, kind of, you know, not dissimilar from what's in this neighborhood a lot. I think just like a warehouse type of situation where a lot of artists were probably just had work studios there. But I think, you know, from the fire standpoint, there was only one a wooden staircase made of pallets or something that went from the second floor to the first floor.
Got it.
And that, you know, just the setup of the space sort of made it into this, like, maze type of environment.
For you to get out.
For people to get out, for firefighters to get in.
And they were saying, like, oh, they didn't have a permit, they didn't have this, they didn't have that.
Right.
So it's just one of those things that it's like, yeah, it's pretty sad, you know.
It's pretty sad, but, you know, this is where there is the reason why the artists moved in there was because there was a lack of space for artists to work. You know, they didn't get a permit. Maybe it wasn't illegal.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of artists do it in kind of invade and like colonize old buildings because there's no other place for them to work. So it's, you know, the government should get involved and actually just provide spaces or like make these abandoned buildings.
But I think
safer.
Probably the opposite will happen, and instead they'll end up cracking down and making it more difficult.
Of course,
to get
and then
spaces.
They're going to rebuild that place and make it like, you know, these million dollar lofts, which is what's happening in New York. I think that, you know, a city is only as cool as its people. And myself, I don't know, I moved here at this point about 14 years ago. Myself, 14 years ago, cannot afford New York City as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, if I were, you know, my 22-year-old self or whatever, coming here is kind of just like, you know, how much you want me to pay for an apartment? Or so it's becoming a place of, and I'm watching all these new developments that are just kind of like popping up in like Williamsburg and Bushwick and this and that, and the prices are so high that I'm thinking like, who can afford this? And it's not a young artist.
Mm-mm.
So they end up going, they're going to start going to other cities like Detroit and some of these other cities that are having these big kind of like booms of like artists and young people moving there, because you can still get property for really cheap. But it's kind of, where is the poor artist going to live? And I do think that there has to be some sort of like provision in every city, and not saying that there isn't one here, but there has to be more accessible provision, I think, in every city, so that you can continue to have the kind of people that you want to move there, which is this young, creative energy, and they have to be able to survive, you know, and and
part of me feels though that like cities always feel that way. There's always gonna, I mean, I do think New York's getting more and more to a crazy degree of that.
Yeah, go to East New York, it's like,
yeah,
you need money to live there.
My biggest gripe is that I just feel banks are opening everywhere. There's no more Virgin Megastore, now it's I think it's a Citibank, and then the retailer that was across the street from there was a shoe store, and now it's a Capital One Bank.
Yeah,
I'm like, how is it that the bottom of Union Square is just banks now instead of, like, if Virgin Megastore can't afford to be somewhere,
oh, that was right.
How...
It did close down.
Yeah, I mean,
ago.
Virgin Megastore,
but
everyone, I think,
like,
media
like, oh, what's
going to
open here? What big store?
Yeah.
Big store, it's a Citibank.
But I also feel like there's a lot of things at play. There's online shopping that was not like how it was before. There's, you know, digital, like, you know. So.
Oh, yeah,
Megastore,
I think particular to Virgin Megastore, sure.
But just in retailers in general, I think that, you know, a brick and mortar is a different experience than it was, you know, 10 years ago or whatever. But I agree. I think that you're going to start looking around, and pretty soon New York City is going to be for the rich. And it's kind of just like, where is that cool kind of like edge that makes me want to move here when, you know what, maybe I'll just go to art school in...
No, that's true, yeah.
Detroit. Yeah. And then all of a sudden that will build up, and it's cyclical. Then all of a sudden people are like, well, I want to be cool. I want to move there. I want to live there. And then before you know it, they get priced out. And then, you know, whatever. So I just feel like it's, you know, I'm here now. And like I said, when I introduced myself, I'm a business owner. So I have roots here now. So it's not about me picking up and moving. It's about me kind of establishing my community and building my community and that kind of thing. But yeah, I think if this were, you know, myself 14 years ago, I don't know. New York City is a different place than it was when I got here. The energy is different. Your bank account needs to be different to survive than it needed to be 14 years ago. And I get inflation, but even with inflation, it's like, you know.
Yeah, things.
It's expensive to live in Bushwick. And what's this area called? Is this called Bushwick?
Bushwick, yeah.
Yeah, and nothing against your apartment, Eddie, but I was kind of nervous walking here from the train station.
No, Bushwick, I think, looks much scarier than it actually is. Bushwick is a great neighborhood in particular because a lot of it is still zoned for industrial. So
okay, got it.
Because a lot of these warehouses will hopefully stay here for a while.
There were some streets when I was walking down and I was like, I'm the only person on this street right now.
No, you're going to be very surprised because there's a few hotels going up within like six
That's
blocks
crazy.
Of here. Big hotels, yeah.
Crazy
stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, we'll probably do...
Yeah, so just to really change topics, I don't know if you guys heard about NASA's statement recently. It says, NASA needs you to solve its zero gravity space poop problem. So The article goes, Houston, we have a space poop problem. NASA is offering $30,000 to the genius who can figure out a way to dispose of human bodily substances while astronauts are strapped into their seats in zero gravity and unable to use a restroom.
Where does that stuff go now?
I don't know where it goes. I think it goes to outer space.
Is that true? That seems like the most logical place. But is the problem that they're stuck in the suits and they can't move, so it's gotta like get out of the suit?
So it's like, it's to manage the waste during a launch and landing. Okay. So sometimes they have longer journeys, and sometimes it, you know, things will take up more than 6 days, and that, you know, it needs to be cleaned out of their of their outer, like their astronaut suits. So it was funny that they kind of just like made a public announcement, and it's called the Space Poop Challenge, you know, in all the news articles.
So it's about reinventing the suit,
basically, or reinventing a way.
Yeah, tell us more information.
Okay, so here are the requirements. Whatever the solution should provide a fecal waste management for a 144-hour period, with or without the use of hands. Okay,
so that means there's pretty.
It's hard.
A critical, whether or not you have your hands is critical.
Yeah, so because they're strapped into their seats, they can't sometimes, you know, they're in their seats.
So really you should develop it for without hands then.
Yes, so the requirements are that it must work without the crew using the hands. The other one is it needs to function in a micro or zero gravity scenario. That should be interesting. And then the third is the suit must maintain an internal pressure of 4.3 PSID. And 100% oxygen level at all times. I don't even know what
I feel
that
like
means.
I'm already disqualified.
You thought you could design a really astronaut suit?
But I think the whole thing is fantastic. The fact that they're opening it up and that they're saying, hey, let's kind of figure this out. It's been very interesting to see who does figure it out. And what was the prize money again?
$30,000.
And I think that's pretty like low price tag. That's a big problem to solve.
Yeah, that's true.
But do they open it up to just like all countries?
Yeah, and
whoever.
And it says,
no, it must be like a U.S. thing.
No, but it'd be interesting if like the same way, like, you know,
I guess maybe.
We were talking earlier off tape about the whole like Gambia and their whole voting thing, and it was very simple with the marbles. I think they're probably maybe I don't know, might be a simple solution.
Yeah, it could be a simple solution.
Maybe another country. Someone from another country or whatever might be able to solve in a very simple way. And, you know, I just think $30,000, that's a big problem to solve for $30,000.
You know, and you have a lot of young kids now innovating really phenomenal stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
So, keep us posted.
Well, good for NASA. I feel like they need to be doing more to get people
involved
interested in
space.
Yes. I feel like it's quite like not a dying art. I don't know if that's the right word, but I do feel like, a lot of people probably not.
Well, there was like the whole space age and people were really hyped up about it and excited about it.
Yeah. The 80s when they landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Well,
that was even more like the 60s for sure.
The 90s space age.
No, I just remember my brother going to like, you know, in the 80s going to like space camp and people were like super excited. I mean, they were doing some incredible stuff in the 60s, but I mean like just in terms of like young kids like still like
and space has sort of dropped off.
Like, who would want to deal with space?
Like
now?
I would love to see what the enrollment at space camp is.
Yeah,
versus what it was in the 80s and 90s.
It's still there. It's still
I just feel like sci-fi was more like, I don't know, a thing.
I think they are trying. I have a friend who works at the International Space Agency in Cologne, Germany.
Oh,
Andrea Borch, the most awesome person ever.
Yeah.
So I met her in Germany a month ago, and she was involved in like promoting the Mars by National Geographic, show in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they're kind of getting schools interested. They're kind of getting the students interested again by making it feel a bit more three-dimensional with these movies and stuff. But, I mean, space world is so fascinating. Yeah. It's kind of hard not to get so fascinated into it so quickly. And then,
What are kids interested in now? I guess virtual reality.
I don't know.
I think
We don't need space. We can create our own crazy
things. Yeah, I guess so.
With, like, Samsung glasses. May or may not blow up on an airplane. Yeah.
But FYI to people listening, the deadline on that is December 20th.
Oh, wow.
Coming up close.
Yeah. Well, Eddie, you need to get practical.
I need to get a physics book.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just mention that. We didn't mention the Gambia thing that you were telling us before.
So that's fun.
End with that. No, I like that. Wasn't it?
I mean, and I don't know all the details, but they just had this really simplistic way of voting that I think is getting a lot of attention because it was very simple and they did it with marbles. And, you know, I think that it just kind of, you can be illiterate. You can still go and kind of vote. And the way they counted it, they made these holes and, you know, I don't know all the details, but it just goes to say that, you know, sometimes whether it's trying to figure out a NASA spacesuit or whatever, that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes simple is better and more accurate sometimes than some of these more robust things, you know? So, yeah, sometimes to move forward, you need to look back.
Mm-hmm. So just as a comparison, then, what do you think about our robust system?
I mean,
I was going to just segue into the recount at the end here.
Okay, perfect. I think it's too complex for me to even, like, I don't know all the ins and outs. Because even if they count it and it's counted correctly and it's like, okay, we got every single vote, then you have to throw the whole Electoral College thing into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but let's just say, do you just as an average American, mm-hmm. do you think that does your gut tell you that there was probably very accurate in the way that it was done the first time? Or do you think that there could be some sort of like reason for them to perform the recount?
My honest answer is that I don't know. So therefore, I think that that says that I don't have a lot of faith in it because I don't know.
Right. I think that's sort of where I am as well. It's kind of like, it's hard for me to even, I'm like, sure, so many, I guess they
there's so
the
many moving
probably,
parts.
Like, someone's taking
and it's like,
care
who was they? There's just so many moving parts that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know, knowledgeable enough about exactly how it works to, how it's counted to...
For me, just the fact that there were so many hacks into the Democrats' emails throughout the whole election campaign that people have to acknowledge that people are trying to do this 100%. We should at least check to make sure that they weren't in any way successful.
So what's Jill Stein saying? Like, what's she...
Well, she basically had said, I'll be fogging on maybe some of the details, but there was a deadline for the three closest states, which is what she wanted to do, which was Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And they needed to raise millions of, like, $7
million. She got the money
to
do it, though, right?
She got the money. And part of that, like, there are fees within the states to do the recount, mm-hmm. and then part of that money was to go towards lawyer fees for fighting lawsuits that would naturally come up or whatever. But so there are places, I think in Wisconsin where there are, or Pennsylvania, or maybe all three states where they are performing the recount already in different counties. But at the same time, there's all these counter lawsuits from Trump and different people in the states that are saying, that are trying to prevent the recount from happening. To me, it just seems like, if you're an American citizen, then there's no bad that could come from the recount. And I don't even think that... I mean, it seems that most people about the recount are saying, first and foremost, no one's expecting there to be a change in the election result. That's mm-hmm. not even necessarily the point. I think the point is to just identify, has anyone been trying to mess with this? And mm-hmm. if so, how can we prevent that from happening? But to me, it's so alarming that there's so many... that the president-elect and that other government people are trying to prevent, are creating lawsuits to clog this from happening. It just seems so undemocratic, I don't know, un-American.
Do you think they're hiding something?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you're Trump, there's probably no... The only result could potentially be, like, a bad result. Either it's going to be, oh, you're still the president, or...
Well, that's a good result.
That's a good result. For
if you're
it can only go a bad way for him, right? Because
yes. Okay.
If the recount doesn't happen, he's still president. If it does happen, that's the only time it could prevent, you know, it could mm-hmm. even like prevent more cloud over his mm-hmm. Everything. But
I mean, I don't know. I just feel like
I think a lot of people aren't talking about it because everyone's so done with the whole thing. They're just like, let me just live my life now.
Yeah, he's the president. Like, let's just figure out what that means for us. And I think, yeah, you have to hunker down and figure out what that means for you and live through these next 4 or 8 years. and yeah, just kind of push through. So that can open up a whole another set of conversation, which I just don't know if we have time for.
No. Well, we'll end with, I hope the recon happens. I think there's a lot of deadlines, I think, that are coming up very close for when it has to happen by. So it seems like we'll at least hear something about it soon. But we'll say that concludes episode 1. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, this was great.
All right, that concludes News and a Bit of Politics episode 1. Special thanks to Nylea and Donna for bravely participating in the first episode. And also thanks to Patrick for the music. Subscribe, rate, tell your friends. See you next week. Bye.